point out just a few funny things that I didn't get to mention in the sermon. One is that the character played by Dave in this reading is called Poloni Almoni in Hebrew, which is like Joe Schmo. Isn't that great? I love that, Joe Schmo. Just some dude. And then this is the only time in the Hebrew Bible where a group of women give a name to a baby. So, didn't make it in the sermon, but some fast facts for you. So this is, as you can tell, when I'm sitting up here, we're probably going to talk together a little bit about the sermon, so prepare your hearts, and let's pray. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So I don't know about you, but I really enjoy getting a glimpse of a person and someone from their past. So I don't know if you all know this, but Judy is an incredible artist. And she passed that talent on to her daughter, who is also an incredible artist. And I've often wondered if Ava will turn out to be an amazing artist too by getting these influences from her mother and grandmother. And I don't know if you've noticed that when Bonnie brings her granddaughter to church, that you can see a familiar smile go across a little face. I'm sure many of us can share about times where we've connected to the generations past, or to the families that we have made through love. Their interests and their skills and their features bubbling up in us. So as we know, the Bible is very interested in genealogy and these kinds of connections, because this is really how you pass the line on in for the Jewish people. And that's the same for Ruth 4, which ends with this line of lineage. In some ways, chapter 4 of Ruth is a strange way to end a book devoted to this young Moabite woman who clings to the older Israelite, Naomi. It's a strange way to end a book about Ruth, about her daring and courage, her willingness to risk everything, to go after justice, because I don't know if you noticed, but Ruth disappears at the end of this story. And Ruth 4, we're at the point in a narrative like this where the conflict is resolving, right? There's that just natural arc of a story. And it comes down to a group of men jockeying for possession of land and the women attached to it, Naomi and Ruth. Boaz wins out. They get married. Ruth has a baby. The baby, Obed, eventually produces this line for the great hero of Israel, King David, a man after God's own heart. But so much for Ruth. She's absorbed into the story of Israel, acculturated into the lineage. For all her acts of bravery and covenant making, at the end of the day, the story becomes one about passing on lineage. Except, this isn't the last time that we'll hear from Ruth. She makes one more appearance in the story of God's redemption, of God's good news of covenant love for all creation. Mark, would you put up the slide for me? And very last minute, I asked Karen to read this, which she, a little deer in the headlights, agreed to do. Thank you so much. Like literally as the service was starting. So thank you, Karen.
Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac the father of Jacob, and Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers, and Judah the father of Perez and Zerah by Tamar, and Perez the father of Hezron, and Hezron the father of Aram, and Aram the father of Amminadab, and Amminadab the father of Nashon, and Nashon the father of Salmon, and Salmon the father of Boaz by Rahab, and Boaz the father of Obed by Ruth, and Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of King David.
Does anyone recognize this from Matthew 1? Yeah, this is the genealogy that starts off the gospel readings, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The first thing that we read as we turn over from the Old Testament to the New is the genealogy of Jesus, the line of Jesus, a little piece of it. It traces the line of Israel from Abraham down to Jesus. And you might have seen some familiar names popping up. And I wonder, did you notice anything about this list that sticks out to you?
Boaz's mother was Rahab?
Yeah, that's interesting. So what else? Anyone else noticing anything that sticks out to you, anything interesting about this?
Tamar is another woman on this list.
Yeah, Tamar. So we got Rahab and Tamar and Ruth, right? Yeah.
It's patriarchal.
Yeah,
same. Except they mention Ruth.
Yeah, yeah. It's so, there's something, there's a reason probably that these three women are mentioned, because it doesn't say Abraham and Sarah, right? Like, it's not everybody gets a shout out here.
I just think it's so telling about who the gospel, I guess what the gospel is, that Tamar was raped, Rahab was a prostitute, and Ruth was a foreigner.
Yeah. So cool. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Yeah, there's some reason that these three women are mentioned here. They're the only ones who appear on this list. And these women share two things in common, things that we heard a little bit about as we were talking here. They all find themselves in positions where they push the limits of sexual morality in a patriarchal culture in order to establish justice for themselves. None of these stories are pretty. They are the grittiest and rawest stories that we have in the Hebrew Bible. They often involve deception and intimacy and risk. But there's something else that these women have in common, something else that you pointed out. All three of them are foreigners. All three of them are outsiders, and they show up in the line of David and eventually in Jesus' lineage. They are not Israelites by birth. So the Bible is a pretty well thought out piece of literature, cultivated and edited for hundreds, if not thousands of years. So there's a good chance that if something that seems obvious is missing, we are meant to pay attention to it. And in this case, there are also quite a few women who probably deserve a mention in a list like this if you were trying to make a case for Jesus being awesome. You would want to include Sarah and Rebecca and Rachel. We call these women the matriarchs because they carry a lot of clout in the Jewish tradition. They are pillars of faith, women of the covenant who usually, through miraculous circumstances, pass along this line of the covenant. And the lineage in Matthew leaves them out entirely. Isn't that fascinating? Instead, we get a shout out to a state traitor who hides spies in her brothel, a woman who dressed up as a sex worker to get pregnant by her father-in-law, and a foreigner who shows up in the middle of the night to uncover the lower parts of a rich landowner and then propose to him. That's kind of weird. Unless we're supposed to be getting something else out of this lineage. Unless we are meant to have Ruth and Rahab and Tamar in the background of our minds as we read the Gospel of Matthew, helping us to understand who Jesus is and why he does the things he does. We're given these words that I suspect most of us have skimmed over to get to the real stories of the Gospel of Matthew, because these want to tell us something about who Jesus is. In the same way we look for a grandmother's eyes in the face of her grandchildren, or confuse the laugh of one sister for another, I think we can look for glimpses of Ruth's great-grandson, Jesus, in the Gospel of Matthew. So that's what I did this week. I went looking for Ruth's grandson in Matthew. And here's a story that I found. Would you mind putting up the story from Matthew? Then suddenly, a woman who had been suffering from a hemorrhage for 12 years came up behind him and touched the hem of his cloak. For she said to herself, "If I only touch his cloak, I will be made well." And Jesus turned and, seeing her, said, "Take heart, daughter. Your faith has made you well." And instantly, the woman was made well. We've seen that lineage was important in the ancient world. What's your name? Who are your people? And when I read this story, this time through the lens of Jesus as Ruth's grandson, I wondered if Jesus thought about the stories he'd been told about his ancestor Ruth as this bleeding woman approached him. She too lived in this world of patriarchy, where women's bodies and blood were suspect and meant to be kept apart. And for a woman who had spent 12 years with the fistula, this meant profound isolation and marginalization. And this nameless woman takes a profound risk. She reaches out to touch a clean Jewish man. She invades in a risky, vulnerable way. She risks humiliation and shame, breaking religious and cultural purity laws. The consequence for this breach of Jesus' body could have been devastating for her. But she does it. She reaches across the border between them, and she touches him. She breaks the law to secure a better life for herself, to be healed and returned to community. Does that story sound familiar? I wonder if Jesus recognized this action, recalls the stories he has been told, just as all of us have been told stories about those who have gone before us. Can you imagine Mary telling these stories to Jesus before he goes to sleep? Or Joseph telling about the past as they're learning a trade. Grandma Ruth, the Moabite, who came with Auntie Naomi empty-handed, and because she was brave, you are here today. You're here because she took a risk. She believed God was with her. And because you are here, we know that God truly was. And so it's no surprise that the grown-up Jesus describes the action of the bleeding woman as an act of faith. This is what faith looks like, pressing into the border, pressing the boundary, pressing into God's love when everything else stands against you. We'll see throughout Jesus' ministry that he seems to be drawn to these border-crossing moments. Perhaps the genealogy in Matthew 1, the attention to the blood of outsiders that runs in his veins, the blood of Ruth, is meant to draw our attention to these stories. Jesus knows the story of the bleeding woman because he knows about Ruth. He knows what faith is because he's seen the stories from the past. This is the end of our time of talking about the book of Ruth. We've been talking about one chapter every week. But over the next few months, we'll be taking an even deeper dive into the stories of God's love passed down through the covenant of Israel, beginning with the creation of the world. And it may feel strange to some of us to be spending so many weeks with the ancient ancestors from the Old Testament. But I hope that what we'll discover along the way is what we discovered here, that we cannot recognize the good news of Jesus Christ without these stories, without witnessing the arc of faithfulness to God and God's people, the the Jews, the faith that we as Gentiles have been graciously grafted into. So together we'll get to discover the way that God has always been making a way for us. That from the beginning of time, God set down this path of love. Jesus knew the path. He knew it flowed through women like Ruth. And as we walk the story of God rescuing people from danger and fear, may God's love in Jesus Christ always be whispering in our ears.